Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/FTSW. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Come to Air Temple Island, the new home.
I'm the Avatar. You gotta chill with it.
You're the Avatar, and I'm an idiot.
You're a firebender. Boil it yourself.
Bolin's got some moves, huh?
I will make no such promises.
The morning is evil.
We shall meet again soon, beautiful woman.
I've been dying to ask you, what happened to Zuko's mom?
I can't wait to get started.
Yes! Finally!
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar The Last Airbender and the Legend of Korra podcast for DonBuFang.net. I'm your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by mini-host Delaney.
Hello.
Philip.
Hi.
And co-host Teresa.
Hello.
This is a mini-cast, you know, whatever. Today we'll be discussing, I've gone down with that line to shorter and shorter. I think I'm going to just eliminate it now, because it's so irrelevant. Today we're going to be discussing, I have a hard time titling this, Good and Evil in the Avatar World, and the Ambiguity Within That Good and Evil, is what I would call it if I had 10 words to work on that. But I think I'm just going to think it's just called Good and Evil. But yeah, so, you know, everyone's all like, oh, Avatar is such a interesting show because... This is a general talking point for a lot of things, because there's the gray area between good and evil, and we'll discuss whether that's true or not. And, I mean, really, that's, like, one of the most frequent praises of any show. And it's like, you know, in real life, there's a gray area between what's good and right, and not right, not good. And if it's a complicated show, then there will be this gray area, which we'll break down, yeah.
And the fact that we see it in Avatar and... in Korra is very impressive as it's children's television.
Yes, yes.
And usually it's stark black and white, but that's not what we see.
Yeah, that's the general talking point, I think. I think it's maybe half true, half not true. I don't know. I guess what I want to get to first is that we weren't going to go over Avatar's good and evil and Korra's good and evil. I think Korra is interesting because it had this potential to be incredibly ambiguous, who's right and who's wrong, yet it did not explore that potential within Book 1. So I think it ended up actually being pretty strictly the Korra crew, or whatever we're calling them, is good and Amon's bad, and you know that's it.
But it's interesting what we see, because we do get to see how the other half, like what they think.
Yeah, so...
As opposed to like the entire time we're like, Ozai's evil, and he doesn't really explain like his thought process.
I think Mike and Brian set out to make... the bad guy's less bad in Korra, and yet they ended it without ever us seeing the viewpoint of the Equalists. And because the Equalists' cause, you know, is at the very least relatable, probably, and certain people would say good, in that they want to equal things out upon society and not have the elite few.
It's just the method.
Yeah, it's also something that Mike and Brian are like, oh, they're developing this probably during the Wall Street stuff, the 1% stuff, and it's like, oh, let's use this. And it except for the fact that they explore, I think they do this best in maybe Out of the Past, I don't remember, with the episode where Tarlok goes crazy and starts trapping everyone.
I remember that episode?
Yeah, it's...
I don't remember him now I remember.
Yeah, Korra in the cage.
It's been so long.
It's been a long time. Was that Out of the Past? I don't even remember.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because that's when she has the big flashback, and we're like, yay!
Yeah, yay. And we see, like, the perils, and it's like, oh, Tarlok... But then that ends up just being, oh, Tarlok's evil. It's not even that cause we're seeing the good sides of it. It's just, oh, look at this brutality that Tarlok is causing.
And we don't even get an awesome Aang speech. He just takes his bending away.
Yeah. I think what's interesting, maybe the most interestingly ambiguous thing, is that we start to feel some amount of sympathy for definitely Tarlok, and also maybe Amon at the end.
Yes, especially at the end.
Yeah, that's maybe the biggest gray area we get to, and that the evil people aren't evil. They're evil for a reason. Like, we see... his backstory and stuff like that. It's disappointing because we thought the gray area we were going to get is that his cause is just, and that we would see that played out, but we don't really see that.
Well, because it's all tacked off by how he's a waterbender.
Yeah, it's discredited. And we don't even see whether anyone thinks... It would be like, so it's like, I think the reason we don't see that play out, or not the reason, but it would be interesting, like, if Aang was in Korra, it would be focused upon more the good or badness of their cause, because Aang is a very moral person. And we might see Aang sympathizing with them and stuff. It's kind of like what's hit upon in the Dumb Genie Aang comics. It's like Aang's deciding whether something that's happening is, you know, like, morally correct or not. Instead we have Korra, whose defining attribute is hot-headed, and kind of what goes along with that is not necessarily caring about right or wrong.
Well, it's just she doesn't think. She's just impulsive. She just takes action immediately.
Yeah,
I mean, we've seen that from, like, the second she gets into the city is just, oh, bad thing, do thing, you know, just react.
Despite the fact that she just destroyed half the block.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's go to Avatar. And Avatar is, the reason I'm talking in the intro, I talked a little sarcastically about the fact that everyone's all like, oh, good and evil is ambiguous in Avatar, is because I think it's maybe similar to Korra. The characters are maybe, some characters we get are ambiguously good and evil, with, for example, Zuko. But really, it's pretty much, oh, the Fire Nation is bad.
Yes.
And that, like, almost seems to follow through into Korra, too, but I guess we can say that for later, like, the whole firebenders killing everyone in Korra.
Yeah, we like to do that. We're like, oh, firebenders, they're evil.
Yeah.
I mean fire bad has been a thing for forever.
Yeah, and it continues. I don't think that's, like, the main thing of Korra, but yeah, that's true.
It's an upsetting thing of Korra.
Yeah, I would it's only, like, three lines, but yes. I'm more upset about Equalist.
Yes, but it's, like, the three... Like, there are, like, three instances where it's pretty important, they're not important, but, like, deaths of that affect main characters, and they're all, you know, death by firebender.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. I mean, I guess maybe they're just like, let's firebenders. I mean, they could have just as easily made it, like, an earthbender. I mean, it's not like there aren't bad earthbenders out there.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's more of they just haven't given it any thought. They're just like, firebender sounds good.
I mean, for all we know, they, like, drew it out of a hat and it just happened.
Exactly.
I mean, they could resolve this in some...
Well, when you think about it, our big villains are waterbenders. You don't usually think a big waterbender is going to be the villain, but we have two awesome waterbenders who just go around hurting everybody.
Yeah, well, we saw waterbenders as, like, quote-unquote villains in Avatar and Pakku, but then he turns good, so, you know.
Well, that wasn't... Well, yeah, I guess you said...
Yeah,
he's kind of a villain.
As much as it was.
He's just a jerk. I don't...
Yeah.
I think he was probably a villain for an episode.
He was just a biased old man. I wouldn't say he was a villain. He just kind of got ticked off at him.
Yeah, like, he wasn't trying to, like, destroy their cause
or
whatever.
It's not like
he was just, like,
tried to kill Katara.
Yeah. I guess. Do we see any Earthbenders as villains? We see Chin the Great.
I was going to say Chin the Conqueror.
Yeah.
And there's that crazy general guy who's like, go into the Avatar State! And then he's like,
Oh, yeah.
General Fong.
He was a bit psycho, yes.
So I think those are more circumstances of where they are at the time, though.
Yes.
It's like, oh, we have to introduce someone like that. The frustrating part with Avatar is that we don't really see the Fire Nation. We see the citizens of the Fire Nation within Season 3. This is one of the things that Season 3 does correct, as opposed to the many things it does incorrect, in that we see them, the daily lives of the citizens, we see that they're relatable, that they're sympathetic people.
Students especially, like when we see the kids.
Yeah, in the headband. We've talked about that. That's something the headband does great. Also, the 303, we see the same thing happening. And with the citizens of the sewage, whatever plant.
But at the same time, that turns other fire... That still makes another part of the nation evil. Like, it's still making an entire group look evil.
Yeah, so that's when we get to. The military, though, however, we don't see much... much sympathy for them. They're just seen as this evil cause. Like, actually, really, the only scene...
They have a birthday party.
Yeah, that's the only scene we get is in the finale with that joke. Like, that's one of the best things they do with that. But...
Or when we have, like, the guards who are, like, tapping their feet, and then, like, they all start screaming at them.
Oh, I guess there are bumbling guards sometimes, yeah.
There are always bumbling guards in every
bumbling guards.
You have to have terrible henchmen. It's just how it has to work.
I feel like you can't really say that they didn't, like... That they are saying all the soldiers were evil because you didn't. They were just there.
Yeah, okay. So I guess more of the point is that Ozai, there's a side to what Ozai's doing, but we don't see it. The best we get is within Avatar and the Fire Lord, and even that episode, it's pretty. Sozin's pretty much portrayed as terrible, you know.
Yeah.
Like he just turns. It's that the way that episode works is he turns evil, not that he finds he. It's more. It kind of portrays like that. It also portrays it as he clings to this motivation. But I think within the context of the show and maybe within that episode, it's just he's a good guy who turned bad.
Yeah.
Which is a little frustrating to look at because he had motivations and such. And
I think.
No, you go ahead.
I think it's less frustrating than the fact that it doesn't really seem like Ozai has much motivation at all. Like, I mean, Sozin had this goal of, you know, expanding their great nation, but then, like, Ozai, like, does he even have a motivation?
He's like the
same thing again? He's just, I want to rule the world as the Phoenix King, but...
Yeah, I think that was the best part of that episode was, Avatar and the Firewood was introducing legitimate motivations into Sozin, and that expand the prosperity of the nation. But yeah, Ozai is not a very good character. We don't really
talk about
him. No, he's
kind of one-dimensional.
He's
just a melodramatic villain. That's just what he is.
To a certain extent, it had to be like this because he's off camera for two seasons. So
yeah. When
we get there, but he's just portrayed as pretty much purely evil and power hungry within season 3.
I mean,
three.
Like when we see him with Zuko, they could have done a lot with that. But no, it's just die. I'm gonna kill my child because he doesn't agree with me.
Yeah, like, we see, don't you want to know what happened? He uses the life or death of his wife as bait and tries to kill his child. Like, it's not very, very good.
But then we do see that duality in his children, though.
Yes.
Azula, and I mean, Zuko especially, but we do see it in Azula because we can see, like, her confusion.
What's interesting is that a lot of the stuff with Zuko, I think this is not done well, in my opinion. But we've already seen my bias in terms of this topic in previous podcasts that the duality of Zuko in that his which is introduced in the Avatar and the Fire Lord, half of his family comes from the good side, half of his family comes from the bad side. I don't think that's productive in establishing the good and bad within the show. It's like Zuko's only maybe good because he's not just purely from these bad people.
Well, especially because of we had that whole thing in the second season with Iroh.
Yeah, like Iroh comes from the same line, and
it just felt like they kind of got redundant. Like we went through this whole process of like Zuko being like finally figuring out who he is, and then he has that moment of where he kind of like he turns on himself, like where he has
they needed to do something with Zuko in season 3 because. They need to expand his arc. Season 2 was kind of beautifully handled, and it got to a certain point, which was very realistic. And it wasn't so much that Zuko is evil, so now he's going back to evil. It's that he went back to what was familiar and what was comfortable to him, which was totally expected.
He had to make a choice in, like, 2 seconds.
And what's he going to do? What had been established throughout his whole life. And it's also that he's pounded into his head that he's, like, this bad person, or, you know, he's Fire Nation. And then season 3... kind of works with that. It takes in a little different direction with Avatar and the Fire Lord.
They do it in less time because we still have to, because they do it in the first half of the season and then they have to like, and then we have to like throw them through all these hoops to get to the end of the season.
Yeah.
As opposed with it just felt different with the second season because it was a slightly less build up.
Let's talk about Zhao for a minute. Zhao's interesting. We talked about this in the last podcast. I don't know if I'm releasing them. Like this little mini cast in of How to Fix Mako. That Zhao,
because we still have Jeff's.
Yeah, and Jeff's one too. Zhao is interesting because I think Zhao is likable.
Yes.
Which is the but
I disagree. I think if you like Zhao, you should maybe see a good therapist.
No, I always
there's nothing wrong with liking bad characters. If we're gonna be fair,
Zhao is so. Terribly evil. It's the thing with Zhao is he's not likable because he might be good. He's just pretty purely bad, I guess.
Completely narcissistic, and that's kind of what makes him likable, I think, because you almost wonder, like, is he really doing this Yeah, like, is he really doing this to be evil, or just because
he's so full of himself?
Yeah, yeah. What's interesting is that Zhao doesn't have these bad motivations. It's more if he's just trying to promote his own self, which is maybe...
Yeah, he's like, oh, hey, I'm going to kill a spirit and just not so consider the ramifications title. At all.
Yeah,
maybe, and it's funny because so he's competing with Zuko, and it's like, really, you're a grown man, and he's... A
yeah, that's also true. I think because of that, he's maybe more relatable to us. So I guess the thing with Zhao is it takes the motivations out of just the evil side, but at the same time, he still does terrible things.
Yes.
And we still find him okay. You know, it also could be his voice actor and stuff like that, but...
I mean, he basically upsets the entire balance of everything and, you know, eventually unleashes a giant moon or water spirit on himself just because he wanted to be able to tack Moonslayer on the end of his name. I mean...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little concerning.
I think Azula is another interesting one. Azula, we see her perspective so often that it's hard not to sympathize with her. At the same time, she only really does bad things.
And then, but then we also do. But as you said, we see the perspective thing. But unlike with Ozai, like we actually see like in the beach, which we still need to talk about. That needs to happen.
Beach minicast. Yeah, the thing with the beach is that it's if you ignore the beach, I think it's maybe valid to ignore that episode because. It's so different in how Azula's portrayed.
But we still see the madness. I mean, even without the beach, we still have that thing where we see Azula's cause, and, like, she's just so messed up on the, like, we see her motivation, how she's cracking.
She's almost absolved at the end of the series because she went insane.
But then what we do see, she's still a little girl. I mean, she's 14. I mean, she...
Yeah,
it's weird to consider the ages of these characters. Like, none of them seems like they're actual ages.
I don't know if the series considers that Azula's 14. I think it's just like, oh, let's put an age on her.
Well, she's younger than Zuko, and Zuko's 16. So, I mean, she's. It's not like she's very old. I mean, at the most, she's 15.
Yeah, but I don't know if that's terribly relevant. But yeah, it's true.
Well, I'm just talking about when we see in the beach. We see her. She wants to have friends. She wants to talk to this boy. She wants to go to this party. She wants to play games. She's nuts, but that's okay. I mean, she's trying. That's what we see. That's been the reason why I think the episode's good. We get a whole episode to see this flip side to Azula while Zuko's off being angsty in the corner.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's a good episode in terms of applying motivations to all these, you know, evil people. But I do think like it's so disparate from the rest of it. It's maybe more important to consider, it's definitely more important to consider all the other episodes than just the beach in terms of Azula.
But we also see later in the season, I mean, it's not even really relevant to the beach, is that how Ozai has twisted Azula into his weapon.
Yeah.
And it's not entirely her fault.
Yeah.
Like, she can't help it. I mean, it's her dad, and her mom, she's convinced her mom hated her. I mean, she's going to cling to the one parent that's shown her any sort of, and it's not really affection, but it's attention.
I think that's probably true, but I don't know how much they focused on that.
Also, like, how much did... Like, do you think Ozai knew what he was doing to his daughter? Because, I mean, like, when he puts her in control, like, as Fire Lord the season finale, like, does he not realize that she's totally, like, she's going insane?
I don't think he would have left someone who he realized was, like, completely crazy.
Well, Ozai's also crazy. Who is he a good judge of crazy? We're gonna be honest.
He's not Azula-level crazy. He's there for the power, Ozai, but he's not...
See, there are different kinds of crazy. One's more supreme than the other.
Well, the fact that he's a different kind of crazy, like, he is in full control of, like, his mind, and Azula is clearly not because she's hallucinating and, you know, all cutting off all her hair and whatnot.
And also, the title of Fire Lord is really kind of a puppet thing anyway, because he's going to be the ruler of the entire world.
Yeah.
Like, that was more of a, you're my child, I've disowned Zuko, you will be Fire Lord.
Or was it just get you out of the way, like, oh, here, go be Fire Lord.
Yeah, because she was mad about it. She was like, don't just shuffle me off, because that's Ozai. Ozai doesn't want anyone else. He just wants it to be him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's more of a, he's just shuffling Azula aside.
I think it's, kind of switching gears. I think it's also important when looking at the good and evil of the Avatar to look at the good side. And whether... So, like, we have Aang, which... And it's interesting because the series, maybe different from other series, portrays... The main character is, like, the moral arbiter of the entire world. Not that that's the Avatar, it's just that Aang is such a moral-based character that he, like, defines what good and bad is, almost.
This is true.
So it's like in Korra, Korra doesn't really care so much about morals, which I think is more of the norm in terms of the main character in the show. So we're inherent.
We also see Aang struggle. Like, that's the big thing with Aang is that it's actually part of his, so inherent to his character, he struggles with it. Like, the whole thing, his whole second season arc. And then the third season arc of just the struggle, which is why we have this more, like, gray area and good and evil in Avatar than we see in Korra.
Well, yeah, I mean, the entire, you know, finale, Aang's arc in the finale, is his struggle between doing what needs to be done and doing what he sees as the right thing.
And I have here, I don't know if we're even following the outline anymore, but, like, Aang and Enlightenment, that whole struggle, like, it's wrong, I can't have these attachments to Katara, it's wrong, this is bad, this goes against my beliefs, but then at the same time, he can't help it, and then finally he ignores the training, he's like, no, I'm not going to do this, and he throws it off, and then he dies.
So it's interesting, because I think that distinction would be made more clear if we saw that the monks were Chess.
Well, just Pathic was like, so, like, you have to let her go, you can't have this, that it's kind of, I would have thought, in Aang's mind, it's like, you can do it this way, or you can do it this way. I mean, there's not, like, an in-between, you have to make this choice.
I guess what I'm saying is that's not necessarily a moral distinction, I think it might be a duties versus wants, more than, so much like at the end. Like, another point is that when Aang's presented with this thing in the finale, with, it's not whether what he thinks is right or not, what he thinks is right. It's whether he has to put away what he thinks is right in order to do what's best for the world. And that's what Itamara is presented of. Like, Aang's moral compass is never really questioned. I guess maybe with the whole Avatar State thing, but I don't necessarily see that as something that was established as the right thing to do would be to giving up Katara. I think that would just be...
Well, that's how Pathic. That's how Pathic's like. If you want to succeed, if you want to master the Avatar State, you have to do this.
It's more of a what's best for the world, not what's morally correct.
But when you think about it, though, like when Aang, because we find out later that the Avatar has to be attached. Like, that's the whole purpose. He's the Avatar. That's why the Avatar was made human. But we see, like, because when Aang makes that decision, it's because when you think, like, for example, Doctor Who, because I just watched that. I just watched what was it? The episode before it, when he's like, I'm human, no, I'm not gonna do this, I don't want to be the doctor anymore.
Oh, that's the one with the, what is that called?
I have it right here, it's Family of Blood and Human Nature.
Yeah.
Yes.
So he's like, no, I'm not gonna do this, I'm not gonna open the pocket watch, I'm not gonna do this. Well, when you think, like, if the doctor didn't do, I'd say it's more not good and evil, but right and wrong. Like, the right thing to do would be, I'm going to become the doctor. I'm sacrificing myself, and I'm going to save England. That's what, at this moment, Aang, because he doesn't know, he's shirking his duties as the Avatar, choosing to, because he can't let go. He has to go save Katara. He loves her. He can't help it. And since we don't know yet that the Avatar has to have attachments, it's kind of the wrong choice, according to Pathic, anyway.
I think it's interesting you're talking about the Avatar staff attachments. I don't think the story actually says that. I think that's an interesting interpretation of Avatar, but I don't necessarily think, like, it ever explicitly says that.
Which interpretation?
Sorry, we just had, like, a background noise get killed there. I guess the call's still working. Just saying that, Pathic was wrong in his analysis of this.
Avatar.
I think that's subjective, because they never actually say anything ever concrete about
this. Is true
about this.
And then the whole like spirit world became why Avatar is human isn't even in the show. It's in that game or whatever.
Yeah, it's not actually. Yeah, which I don't. I guess I don't factor in. Maybe I should factor in, but I don't.
I feel like there has to be a reason because all the other spirits are like, we're in the spirit world floating around, and then the Avatar is the supreme spirit who gets to be human.
No, I think your interpretation is probably correct, but the show doesn't necessarily say that.
Well, I just felt the need to explain why I have it written down on my good and evil, because it's not just good and evil. I mean, we're talking about, like, right and wrong, and in our own perceptions of what's right and what's wrong, because we live in a different world. We don't live in their little universe.
And I guess overall with Avatar, Avatar is kind of a show about good and evil, as much as it maybe doesn't want to be. Because
it's a lot about choices, I think.
Yeah. The general plot stops once the evil is defeated. We don't ever get to see the evil people, what happens to them after, whether the Fire Nation becomes good. We start to see that within Korra, but it's not focused upon.
They were totally ignoring the comics.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
We should be.
Yeah, like, I'm gonna do that.
Hurts.
But, yeah, so it's a simplified overall plot for the show, I guess, is what I'm saying. Like, as much as there's ambiguity within some of these characters, and maybe within the people of the Fire Nation, it's still very much a good versus evil show. Even if Mike and Brian wanted to be in balance versus... Talk about Korra some more now.
Can we talk about Tenzin, Lin, and Pima? It's like my favorite.
The very
point
end.
This... Have we been following that?
No, yeah, we're not following that one. Sure, talk about Tenzin and Lin.
Awesome, because this is my favorite point. Like, when I finally thought it out, I was like, this is great. This is going to be the end. But it doesn't matter, because that line's terrible. And we kind of talked about it in the Mako cast, but we have this triangle. We have this old triangle, Tenzin, Lin, and Pima. And, like, it's kind of more of a, oh, this is funny, this story. Jinora and Ikki's talking about, you know, giving Korra advice. But when you think about it, it's really horrible. We have Lin, she's all alone. I mean, they're in their 50s. It's not like they're not getting any younger. And Tenzin have been dating Lin for, we're assuming it's a long time. Or they had to have been, I mean, for a little bit, dating. And then they break up, and for some reason, we don't know what it is. I have a few theories, but that's not what we're talking about. And then he starts seeing a girl that he was probably around when she was born on the island. I mean, she's...
I thought she was from the mainland. I thought she wasn't one of the air people to begin with.
I don't know.
She probably wasn't born on the island, but she was...
I don't think the air acolytes are, like, that's their entire life. Like, I think they go into that at some point.
Well, I'm just saying that, like, Tenzin's a lot older than... He's 15, 16 years older than Pima. So, I mean...
So this isn't good and evil. This is, like, you know, morally okay, you know?
Yeah, it's, like, right or wrong. Which, I mean, it's not, like, all good and evil, because, I mean, I'm just... Yeah. It's really, like, the choices, like, they're just very odd.
Yeah, okay, so this is a non-traditional situation. I think the way it's approached by all is probably fine. Like,
well, I mean, I'm not judging. I'm just saying it's strange. I mean, and it's just, it's interesting to bring it up. We see this, and Korra follows its example with Mako and Asami. Like, they bring this up, and then they copy it. And it becomes kind of a, not, I wouldn't say a theme, but what were you going to say, Philip?
The popular thing, the most popular thing, theory I see for the reason that Tenzin and Lin break up is because of some kind of, like, sterility on Lin's end, and he has to have, you know, there has to be more airbenders.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so,
or,
you know,
or Lin,
like,
simply
like,
it,
no matter what the feelings are,
okay,
there,
so,
like,
so,
he has
so,
an
yeah.
application.
So, like, we, that's not, like, what the show says. So, I mean, it's an interesting theory, but.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just, while they present it, we have Tenzin left Lin, and Lin was mad about it. She arrested Pima. That happened.
That was established as happening?
Yeah, that happened in the show. Yeah, they talked about it. And Tenzin's like, you arrested Pima. Like, that was one of the episodes.
And then, I don't remember that.
I don't remember that either.
Oh my gosh.
I swear I didn't make that up. That's actually in the show. I promise.
Okay.
This isn't fan fiction.
Okay.
But,
sure it isn't.
I swear, like, Lin was mad about it. That's why Lin and Tenzin hadn't talked for a while. So we have Tenzin left Lin for a person who's very much younger than Lin. And then, so we have Lin, you know, she's saving Republic City and whatnot, and then Tenzin and them are on the little, I mean, just the fact that we don't bat an eye at it, like, this is brought, and then Korra's like, yeah, you're a heartbreaker, Tenzin, and it's like, really, we're gonna treat, this is, it just, it, I just love how, like, it's just odd for a children's show.
Yeah, well, so yeah, I think that's the interesting part, is that this isn't, like, an area they usually, they've gone into in the past. In terms of, like, relationship dynamics and the morals of those. And they flat out... It could be that they're just flat out ignoring relationship morals, because that's what Mako gets into.
Or maybe they were just playing service, or where you, like, want everyone to get together, and they were like, okay, so they dated for a little bit, but they didn't work out.
I mean, we have to differentiate between what is questionably ethical within society and within our society and what is actually not okay. Because Tenzin dating the younger woman, he can do that if he wants.
Yeah, that's fine. Oh, I'm not judging. It's just a very odd,
I agree that it's odd, but I also think that Mike and Brian, I think maybe their attitude is we don't care. But then they maybe take it too far with them.
Like, I have written down right and wrong. I'm not saying, like, I think one way is right or one way is wrong or the other. It's just that that is what they're bringing up, is that this idea of what's right and what's wrong in relationship and what to do, and just the ideas that we don't get a lot of that. We just get these, they were once together, and then it's presented in this mystical fairy tale where people die in a volcano and there's unicorns and Icky's just going nuts.
It's also, it should be noted that we don't really see much of this story.
No, we don't. It's just presented to get Lynn.
Yeah, we just get,
and
like, the surface layer.
It would be interesting to see it expanded upon. But
I would like, I want it to be explored in, not necessarily season two, but just explored at some point.
I mean, like, there's two options. Either it's the Airbenders thing, and they couldn't populate the Airbenders, or it's the they find out that Taka happened, and it's like, we can't.
Yes, that's official. Yes, that happened.
That obviously is what happened.
Yep, definitely.
Well, I think Taka could have happened very well, but it would have just been after Lynn was born, which I'm totally okay.
I am on board with that too. It just needs to happen.
Just any way Taka happened.
Yeah, exactly. Really, preferably, I'd rather it be Taka happened after Lynn, because we don't need weird incest going on. We don't need
that. Yeah, I would agree with that. But they need to confirm that Taka happened, because
also, incest is wrong everywhere. Everywhere.
She also could be adopted, though. So, you know. Like,
yes.
Whatever.
I had not ever even thought about that with Lynn and Tenzin. Like, if that was a Taka baby. I'd never thought of that.
We definitely discussed that.
Well, talking about to disprove it, because we're like, hey, they dated, and like, Tenzin's not going to date his cousin.
I actually remember being really disappointed when that was revealed in Korra, because I was convinced that Lynn was a Taka baby, and then when they said that Lynn and Tenzin dated, I was like, oh, my dreams are crushed.
Also, I don't think Lynn's going to be adopted unless Toph has cousins out there, because she looks dead up like her mom. She looks dead up like Toph's mother, her grandmother. That's what I mean. Lynn looks like her grandmother.
Yeah,
that's true.
And she acts
father,
like
Korra. It's stuff with Korra. I don't even remember anymore. That was kind of a side topic.
No,
you go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, we kind of talked about it, but, like indoctrination and ideology, like, the fact that we see it in Avatar is very nice, because it's giving, like, a reasoning behind things, like with the Equalists. And, and the Fire Nation school, like, they're being taught this incorrect history. Like, because it's one thing to be like, they're evil, and like, just be told they're evil the entire time. They're evil, they're evil, they're evil. But then we actually see it. Like with Harry Potter, when we see, like, it's crazy, but the reasoning behind the Death Eaters is explained.
Yeah, so we see the propaganda within the Fire Nation.
So, and that's, and the Equalists, and like, why they're like, hey, and really the Equalist thing makes sense. They're just crazy and want to take everyone's bending away.
Yeah, so, I mean, and we talked about the Equalists a little bit, but actually a lot. But the most interesting thing about the Equalist movement is that it's a relatable cause, and it's not just this Fire Nation that's so bad.
Yeah.
It's also, even if you don't necessarily agree with their cause, it's also not just a group of like people trying to keep power. It is normal people trying not to be like oppressed or whatever.
Oh, yeah, like, well, it's just, that's what we see. We see common people there. They're the ones who take over the pro-bending arena.
Yeah,
that's why it was so powerful.
Amon isn't this king like Ozai. He's not this
but
powerful
he's,
person. Yeah.
He's actually
he's like
the snow
an
body.
Answer to them.
Yeah.
So, like, he's what he kind of got them going. Like, they're not evil, they're desperate. I think the Equalists themselves are, if anything, more of the victims rather than the oppressors of the Benders, obviously. Duh, never mind. That's completely addressed, and that didn't make any sense. But
well, no, it's an interesting thought to think that the people within the Equalist movement are being tricked by Amon, which
they are.
They are, but I don't. Yeah.
Like, for example, we just see it for a little bit with Lieutenant. He's like, "You lied to me. I've given you my life.
I dedicated my life to
I don't even remember what the motivations are at the finale. Like, it's been so long.
Well, it's Amon had a plan, but we didn't really see the plan.
Yeah, like, what's his motivations? I can't. But actually, I don't remember this.
I don't remember either. I was trying to remember that too. What was Amon's motivation? Did they even tell us?
Amon was like, I hate benders and we have to make society equal, but he would have been in power and he's like the only waterbender, so I don't really... It didn't actually make sense when you think about it.
I think I should probably rewatch the finale.
Probably.
I don't think he had motivation, though. That's the frustrating part.
He was a waterbender. What is he complaining about?
Well, he can still hate benders being a waterbender.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can.
Was it because, like, was it because of his father? Was it because of Yakon and, like...
Well, the Avatar took his father's bending away, which...
Yeah, but then that made his father, like, so, like, force him to be a bloodbender, and, you know, we saw the flashbacks with little...
Well, so you're talking about, like he's just... Benders oppress people to their will, the Avatar. He's the ultimate incarnate of having power over people who aren't benders.
I think this is the problem with where Korra went. We saw this interesting dynamic with ambiguity happen at the beginning of Korra, and then at the end we don't see any motivations played out. We don't see the thing is that the movement just fizzles because it's like, oh, Amon is irrelevant, and now they're just all content. Like these problems are totally gone now.
It's like he brought up good points, but.
We have no idea whether he genuinely believed it or if he just like, this is an easy, you know, this is seems to be a problem. It's an easy way to power.
Yeah.
It just got confusing.
It's frustrating because we thought we would see genuine ambiguity.
And they could have done so much with it. We really could have explored, like, this is right, this is wrong with the benders. Like, how the benders are in power, and then we have, I mean, the majority of the population are non-benders, from what we assume.
Yeah. So now, I think, is a good place to end it. Now we're going to see book two, and we're definitely going to see forced moral ambiguity based on what plotline they've chosen, because we've seen that spirits are going to be like the villains, but it's not like they can just ignore the fact that spirits throughout the entire Korra and Avatar are portrayed as good. So.
Oh, and this goes to a point. Look, I have it. It's even on the outline. Spirit world, apathetic spirits.
Yes, correct.
Because the entire time they're like, we don't really care. The Avatar does this. We're kind of jealous of the Avatar because he's like the all powerful spirit, but he's not just a spirit. Blah 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 blah. And then all of a sudden they're evil and they're mad about something.
Yeah. So we'll see what they get mad about, but.
I would like to think it's pollution, but that's just me.
It's this.
I would like to think that it's not, because I feel like that's...
Well, that'd be really basic and annoying.
Mike talked about in an interview how it would be interesting to see how the spirits would react to the increased technology within the world, which is probably what this is about.
But I feel like that's, you know, how much more obvious can you get they draw inspiration from Miyazaki? I mean...
Well, we don't... there's ways to handle this that aren't... necessarily what Miyazaki is trying to find. And even if it is, you're not going to go wrong replicating Miyazaki.
Well, as someone who's never watched any of those things, I know Dylan's going to start screaming at me, I know. But
I won't scream at you, but you should. They're enjoyable.
From a historical standpoint, and then what we see in Avatar, it would make sense that they bring this in because the Avatar world has an aspect we don't. They have a manifest spirit world. They have spirits who can do these things, and it would make sense that we have a reaction to it. Just like in our world, industrialization brought on a lot of secularism. Now, we don't see direct effects of this because we don't have people coming out, like, attacking us. But we have that in the Avatar world. We have a manifest, something we see that happens all the time. So it's logical that would happen. I mean, they could do something really cool. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a writer on the show. I don't know what they're going to do. But it would make sense logically to have the spirits be mad about the pollution.
Well, not just pollution, just people.
And the lack of people. And do we ever have a moment where we're like, oh, the spirits, save us, spirits? We don't have that. It's Avatar, please save us.
Yeah, so people are, you know, like, forgetting about the spirits.
The only, thing we get is in the Northern Water Tribe.
Yeah.
In the season one finale of Avatar with the spirit of the ocean, spirit of the moon, but then that's never continued. It's like, so do they pray to the spirits? Do the spirits have a direct influence on their lives? No, they just mention them that one time and then you never learn how
to play. We never see anything about it aside from when, like, the spirits choose you or something. We see Tween-Law and we see Hei-Bai, but
and
everything
the owl
else...
spirit, who's really mad about the library.
Yeah, that's true. For the most part, like, no one mentions them or doesn't.
Yeah, so this goes back to the religion in the After Hours, which we've discussed a thousand times.
And how we don't know anything about the spirit world.
Well, in that we don't... People don't necessarily worship the spirits. It's not very much expounded upon in the show. And they're just kind of there. But
we have faith in spirits, like the Painted Lady. Like, oh, please, the Painted Lady's going to save us.
Yes, we've had that, too. Are the people 100% aware that the spirits are there? Yes, in Avatar, maybe in Korra, I think. Because, like, if you're 100% aware that this thing is there, we're not going to have the same relationship with religion in our world. And this is just basic points that we've gone over in religion. It's not the same thing, because it's not faith-based, it's observation-based, you know?
And in Avatar, we see, like, interaction with the spirits and things like that. And in, like, Imprisoned? Like, it's the spirits, crap, they're attacking us on the bridge, oh my god, we can't see, spirits! We don't have anything of the sort in Korra, like, there's no, like, we don't have this, like, superstition or...
Yeah, so, like, are the spirits mad that people aren't thinking of them? Are they mad that, is that the world is hurt because of technology, or are they mad about the advancement of technology in general?
Or maybe Korra, because Korra took so flippin' long.
Well, also, the world is a much different, like, suddenly everything's different. There's an entirely new, like, nation.
Yeah, and also, like, the balance
is off. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that might be it, too. So we get to see, the point, though, in general, is that we're definitely going to see moral ambiguity in this season, because, I guess not, because they could have just have an evil spirit, like, that's controlling everyone else. But but in general, even with Ko, Ko's not bad. Ko's just there.
Yeah, they're spirits. I mean, they exist in this... I mean, they don't exist in this black and white world. I mean, they're spirits. I mean, they don't... It's not like this...
Yeah.
It's different. I mean, they themselves, like, challenge the whole black and white thing, because they're spirits. Like, they don't... I mean, nothing really affects them that we know of.
Yeah.
They're just kind of there, and they kind of get mad at the Avatar sometimes, where they really don't care.
They just do their own thing, and if anyone interferes, they're just there.
Like Hei-Bai. I mean, Hei-Bai was just, he just got mad when they started messing with his forest.
Yeah. Definitely the viewpoint, though, with an Avatar we got is what the show, like, you know, quote-unquote says is a deference towards the spirits. We definitely get that. Like, the spirits are, like, I don't know if it's that the spirits are good, but don't, like, mess with them, because that's wrong. Yeah.
Well, it's like, because they're kind of, like, they're apathetic, but then, like, don't make them mad. Like, Hei-Bai specifically. Usually he's a happy little panda.
Yeah.
And then when you make him mad, he's this scary, like, I don't even know.
Four-armed.
Thing,
yeah,
you know?
I don't even.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's just some sort of monster.
Yeah.
It kind of looks like Trigon from Teen Titans, but we don't have to. Just weird.
Yeah, so I guess we'll see where they go. They went in a disappointing direction within Korra. At the same time, the villains aren't... We don't have an Ozai in Korra, in Book 1 of Korra. Amon isn't... It has motivations shown. We see his entire backstory. And we don't necessarily care about him, but at the end, we definitely feel sympathy for him. Ozai has a similar moment of defeat at the end of Avatar, but I don't think you feel sympathy for him.
Oh, no, you're just like, ha ha, your bending's gone, ha ha.
So I think it's different in that regard. And it'll be interesting to see how they handle it in Book 2 with the spirits.
But I guess the draw from this is that, I mean, there is black and white, and then there's some gray area, but what we really want is that with Korra, they could do a lot. Because especially since they're older characters, and we seem to be going into darker territory...
Though, like, it is still a Nickelodeon TV show.
Yeah, well, we've seen some pretty dark stuff.
Yeah, they've gotten away with a lot.
Yeah,
so there's a hope that we could get some more moral ambiguity. There is no good title for this topic. There really isn't. But
it's both, right? Yeah. Moral ambiguity and ambiguity. But yeah, any last thoughts? Any things you would be looking forward to in regard to this in Book 2, et cetera, et cetera?
I'm just looking forward to... I hardly even care about the whole moral ambiguity thing. I just want to know what the heck is going on with the spirit world, because we know nothing.
Yeah, so do you want
so that didn't, that didn't help.
Like, you want the backstory on Sparrow World, or do you want
yes, to I'd like to know, like, what it is, because it's just kind of this place, like, how do you get there? Can anyone get there? How did, you know, maybe we'll find out how Iroh got to the Spirit World, because...
Yeah, and this is off topic, but I'm worried that by explaining it, they're going to ruin it, because...
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it's...
Well, just, I mean, they can explain it, and we can just ignore everything and make up our own idea, but...
That's basically my plan.
Like, I mean, they had an entire episode written out with Iroh in the Spirit World, didn't they? That I just
I don't think they wrote.
Well, they had it like planned
they had
out.
Ideas. Well, Annie Haas had ideas on this because like, he wrote that plot line, and then it just wasn't finished.
Well, it's kind of like we're afraid this is going to lose its magic. Like if we just beat it down so much, we're going to be like, oh, the Spirit World isn't even as cool as we thought it was, or it's going to be like this is terrible. So I can see, I feel like they're still going to be trying to be mystical about it, which would be great, because if they explain everything down, it's going to be, bad.
Explaining the spirit world, I think, is a lose-lose for them. Well, like, even if they don't explain it and people complain, and people complain.
Okay, it's like that guy with the glasses, if you've been watching Nostalgia Critic, which he talks about, is in the beginning, like, they don't reveal everything at once, so they can start pulling these things out, which are interesting, and kind of explain it, but don't tell you everything so you don't have, so they can do stuff, and you're not like, hey, wait, you can't do that. Or just be helplessly confused. Instead, you just accept it at face value because you don't know the extent of the world. So if we get the Spirit World and they explain it down so much, like that's where we're going to have problems. So that's what you're talking about, like it being a lose-lose.
The problem is that it's mystical, and if we apply logic to it, it's going to not make sense.
Exactly.
Yeah, so...
Well, if they explain it a little... I mean, just explaining a little bit, just like how Iroh got there, just a few things.
Yeah, I want to know.
They won't do that, but...
Well, or just, I would like to know why the spirits are mad.
How many times have you said that before? Fan fiction it is, yeah.
Actually, not many. I don't really read fan fiction.
Well, the Taka, you know, stuff, we gotta see.
That's true.
Yeah, we gotta see that. Okay.
Yes, yes, that's something that needs to happen in book 2. Taka flashbacks.
Yeah. Well, Katang flashbacks.
Yeah, all the
flashbacks. Yeah, just everyone flashbacks. Just give me flashbacks.
Mako flashbacks. I'm okay with that, too.
Season 2 doesn't actually have to be Okora. It can just be, like, all the gang in their mid-30s.
Exactly.
It would just be what we wanted Season 4 of Avatar to be.
Yes.
Okay. Good. Yeah, now we're sufficiently off topic. I've been your main host, Dylan. Many hosts have been.
It's over?
Delaney. Abrupt ending. Delaney, Philip, co-host, Teresa.
And the outline I didn't.
It's good job, Delaney, for the outline, yes.
The outline we didn't even use.
We hit on like everything, except for one of them, I think.
Which I'm fine with, because usually when we do these, it's me ranting for like 20 minutes, and I feel really awkward,
you had the Harmony Restoration Movement on there? Yeah, we're not talking about that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm okay with that. You said we were going to ignore it. I'm fine.
Okay. What do you guys want to end on?
Freezing to death. I'm joking, no.
We didn't have any good jokes in this one, yeah.
No, we really did. What's fan fiction? Why not? I mean,
fan fiction it is.
Yeah.
Fan fiction it is.
Okay. Thanks for listening, guys. 1, 2, 3, fan fiction.
Fan fiction
it is.
Yay. Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar The Last Airbender and the Legend of Korra podcast for DongWuFang.net. I'm your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by Britt.
Hello.
Philip.
Ah.
And Jeff.
Hello.
This is a mini-cast where we discuss a single Avatar Korra topic for a brief period of time, and today we'll be discussing Young Justice comparisons to Avatar and Korra. Young Justice was a show that aired on Cartoon Network for, like, 2 seasons. I don't know if it was correlated to 2 years, but...
I think three.
Almost three.
3 years, yeah. And it was made by like Greg Weissman and
Infiniti.
Yeah, and other people. And it was about young superheroes in the DC universe.
If your childhood goes
like,
back that far,
252
you might...
universe, I believe.
No, it was in its own universe called Earth 16, which has no connection to any other pre-existing DC Comics universe.
Yeah.
They basically did their own thing.
And it's, like, kind of based off a series.
Contrary to popular belief, no connection to DCAU.
Yep. It's its own
world. I think there is a thing called Young Justice. It's not, like...
They do have a comic.
Maybe, like,
inspired
by...
There was a comic in, I believe, the 70s.
No, isn't there more of a current one?
Well, yeah, but it runs in the same universe as the TV show.
So it's like more, it's based off the TV show instead?
Yeah, it ties directly into the TV show.
Yeah.
They have a tie-in comics.
The okay. one it's based off of is from a while ago. It's nothing super recent.
Okay.
And it's not good. Don't read it.
Connects to comics, whatever. So yeah, we will be discussing comparisons from this because it's an awesome show. It unfortunately got canceled this year.
Boo.
Because Cartoon Network sucks. And
I can't believe it was still this year. Seems like forever ago.
Yeah.
March.
Yeah, the finale aired earlier. We will be getting into spoilers for every single episode of the show. So if you have not watched and you intend to, I mean, we're just going to do it right away because there's big stuff that happens at the very last episode that we can't really avoid talking about.
Before we start on this stuff, I have a comparison I think fits before we get into actual show details. It's more of a meta one.
Okay.
Where the creators of the show both are like very strong personalities. Like you don't see that in a lot of other shows, but both Avatar and Korra with Bright and Greg Wiseman and Young Justice, I think both played a very strong role in the fandom and in guiding the show that I think you don't see in a lot of other live action and animated TV shows.
Greg actually worked for the second half of season 2. Without pay, because he wanted his show to be the best that it could be. So, okay. He basically did work for free.
I mean, Greg Weisman's a very prominent animation figure in America. Gargoyles, I think.
Yeah, Gargoyles.
Gargoyles.
Yeah. I think a lot of the audience may not remember Gargoyles.
Well, yeah. And, I mean, I don't, never watched it. And Greg Weisman will be working on the new Star Wars TV show. I think. Yeah. For Rebels, yeah, Rebels. So yeah, spoilers for Young Justice start now. Okay. First, I guess there's a lot of random stuff in this outline that we made. Brittany made the outline with help from other people in
Dylan.
DF chat. Yeah.
This other people, as in Dylan.
With me.
No one else helps me, Dylan.
No, Jeff, there's something on the outline that says Jeff, and then a quote from Jeff, so...
Are you
know.
Sure?
Yeah.
That wasn't all... Okay,
I said something, but I wasn't for the outline, so...
Whatever. Well, other
this
people
is not important.
So we're going to talk about, as with all these comparison about minicasts, they're basically just an excuse to talk about the show, but we actually have to talk about comparisons. So I guess the first thing I want to talk about is, like, ships and also kind of characters. Because there's one point on the outline, Superboy and Zuko... daddy issues, which I think is true, but also their character, they're also kind of the same character archetype of the angsty, brooding, attractive male lead. Other examples include Jon Snow in Game of Thrones,
yeah,
and Haru in Free, as me and Allie discussed. Mm-hmm. These are all, it's one of my least favorite character archetypes. But I think beyond that, there's not all that many... I don't know if the Young Justice characters beyond that fall into such narrow archetypes. I think they're pretty creative.
Even Superboy's archetype is pretty creative because his daddy issues are with someone who he is technically a clone of.
Yeah, it's a twist on it.
Yeah, clone of two people. One of which is evil, so...
Yeah, I think in the beginning of the... So I think Young Justice starts as one show and then evolves into something, quote-unquote, deeper. Because in the first few episodes, it seems like it's just going to be about... Rusty on any of the plot details here. Because
okay.
It's been a while.
Don't worry, I will.
Robin, Superboy, and Flash.
Kid Flash.
And then Magan joins them and she's like the girl... And then
no,
eventually,
you forgot Calder.
And then Calder, yeah. So it's like a group, and they feel, and it's like, oh, here's a girl, and there's going to be romantic things with Superboy and Magan, and then eventually Artemis joins, and then it starts getting these roles start getting subverted. I think they start getting more interesting because of the non-traditional plot like lines that they take. They start skipping time, doing weird things, and to a certain extent, it makes the plot lines more interesting, but it also like takes you out of the character arcs, kind of. I think it's definitely intentional though. But anyway, so it starts to become hard to compare these characters to any one character in Avatar Korra. So like Magan, like who do you think she's most similar to in either show?
I would say Katara, maybe, due to, like, her naivete.
Yeah, definitely Katara. More like season one Katara.
Yeah.
And then she definitely has some, like, season three darkness of Katara happening in season two, but she gets, McGann gets much deeper into sort of the dark, morally ambiguous character than Katara ever did.
Yeah, Katara had that for two episodes at most.
McGann started brainwashing people.
Yeah, it definitely gets darker territory than Avatar. But yes, then if we're doing ships, like, that's not, it doesn't work as Zutara.
No.
Because that doesn't exist. But,
no.
Yeah, McGann and Superboy is, like, I would say is kind of the Zutara, like, of the show. Like, it falls under the opposites archetype, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely, I wouldn't describe it as Ketting at all.
Well, when Superboy sort of gets over his daddy issues, he becomes sort of the quieter, sweet person. So, not really. It doesn't fit, though. He's never Aang.
No, I don't think so. I think maybe Robin is more Aang or Calder. It's kind of a mix between those two.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then as you describe in the outline above, you say McGann's telepathy is like Avatar state. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, McGann's telepathy gets stronger and stronger. You know, she doesn't really have complete control over it, especially season one when she, episode Failsafe, when she basically makes everyone think that they're dying and that they died and that giant mess. You know, and at the end, John, who is her uncle, who is Martian Manhunter, says, she has the strongest telepathic mind that I have ever seen, stronger by far than mine. It's sort of like the Avatar state. It's just like an uncontrollable power that is linked with her emotions. Since she was so emotionally ingrained.
Yeah, that's definitely a good point.
The emotions is just so, like, Aang's Avatar state was affected by his emotion.
Yeah, but it's more of like a side character, quote unquote. Which is definitely, I mean, there's no, like, main character in Young Justice, but at some point it does seem like McGann's the main character.
Yeah, they all take that role. It changes per episode. Like, episodes often have focus characters.
Getting back to the specific comparisons, I think Kid Flash is most similar to Sokka.
Definitely.
That's, like, the comic relief type character.
Yeah.
I was going to say Robin might also fit that.
I think Robin a little bit, too, yeah.
I mean, he's comic relief who very suddenly develops a love interest.
Robin also makes the plans, and, like, Sokka is the plan guy.
Yes.
Also, he doesn't have any special powers.
Yeah.
Nope.
That's true.
And he grows up to be really hot. Important.
The art.
And has as many women going for him as as Robin does.
Yeah. So Nightwing actually canonically gets with several of them.
Yeah. Whereas Sokka, nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
I mean, 3.
Definitely not Yue.
317. But
317.
Yeah. Artemis, to me, seems more like Asami, even though she's not an Avatar character.
Yeah. I don't know. They have, like, the same sort of trust them aspect, but at the same time, they're so different. Yeah, they definitely betray their father.
Yeah, they were ambiguously good or evil for a while. That's kind of they're kind of the same archetype.
They have different takes on their background, because Artemis knows what she is, and she's trying to get away from it, and then Asami doesn't, and is really shocked by it.
So, Spitfire, which is the ship of Artemis. It's interesting. It's kind of a Suki Sokka ship.
No.
I think that's probably the closest.
I guess it's the closest we can get.
Yeah.
I guess. But they're also completely different.
Comparing
Suki Artemis to Artemis, Suki that's is not quite... Yeah.
One is a good character, one is not a good
And as in good character, as in well-developed character.
Who doesn't just reappear in the show and suddenly becomes awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Nope.
But, yeah, I don't know.
Sokka doesn't die.
Well, yeah, so we could talk about that. So the big, I think the biggest difference between these two shows, or one of them, is, like, bad things actually happen in Young Justice.
Yeah, and bad things, like, to the extent, never really happened in Korra, or they weren't permanent in Korra or Avatar.
So, like, before
all the bad things were in the exposition.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Before the Avatar finale aired, I think that there were, like, major questions on who would they kill off. It was kind of the same thing as J.K. Rowling before the Harry Potter finale.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you're going to kill off someone. Who's it going to be? And then in both series, no major characters. Like, actually, like, you could say, like, it was whichever one, Fred or George. But, like, it's not a major character. So
she didn't kill off Hermione.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's Ron and Sokka would be the most likely targets for this, based on their archetype.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it would be more tragic, because it's the totally likable guy. And I think the significant portion of the fandom did think Sokka might have been killed off. But in Young Justice, is the same. Wally is the same archetype, who should die at the end, and he actually does die. So that's, I think, a big difference, even though it's completely differently handled, because season two of Young Justice is crazy, and Wally's not actually in most of it. So it seems cheap, but, you know. Also, I think maybe the romance goes further in Young Justice. We see more kissing and stuff.
More kissing, Artemis and
implied Wally activities
live together. She walks on screen without pants on. Okay.
That scene's so good.
I do not remember this at all.
It's in like episode 4 or something.
It's in the Roy scene. It's like at the end of
the beginning of season 2.
Beginning of season 2.
One of the first episodes. Yeah.
There's certainly plenty of innuendo.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot. I feel naked and not in a fun way.
That's true. I remember that line.
This season 1 too.
Those are the main ships. I mean, we also have Magan and Lagoon Boy. I don't know if that counts as a ship.
I don't think it counts as a ship. They break up.
That's what break up? Oh, that's like Mako and Asami.
Yeah, it failed.
In that it fails. Okay, let's start going down this list randomly. And we can go back to specific characters, comparisons and stuff. Traveling the world and saving lives. That's a very general comparison.
Yes, it is.
They go around the world. Well, they don't have an APA. APA equals teleporting.
They have the Zeta Beam radiation. Yeah. So.
That would be much more helpful for the Avatar world to have.
They should really get on that.
They apparate everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And they save lives. That's, yeah, okay. I don't know if that counts as a comparison.
Evil. Well, it's the basic outline of the show.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to get down to bigger bones, they do travel around the world and they save people and do good deeds.
So I think in general, season one of Young Justice is similar to Avatar The Last Airbender in overall story arc.
Yeah.
It follows this very
similar
saving people, general hero's journey. And then season two of Young Justice isn't really similar to anything, but it's similar
to similar to Korra
in that there's like a specific dark plot going on, and they're introducing, they're going like moving really fast, and it's more plot heavy instead of character heavy.
Yeah, first slash like, season Young Justice and like Avatar had kind of the single episode story arcs and stats some, but not a whole lot of multi episode arcs. Whereas Young Justice season 2 and Korra had a lot more of that.
Jeff?
Well, I feel like I might be missing or like misremembering some of season 1, but it seemed like even though they do travel a little bit, they don't travel to the same extent as season 1 or just all of Avatar.
No,
like, it seems a bit more centralized.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. It's also hard to tell because they're just moving randomly around everywhere.
They go places. They don't necessarily travel.
Yeah.
Because they always had their central base.
Mm-hmm. Mount Justice, which blows up.
Evil only has to win once. What do you mean by that?
In Young Justice, they often would make, like, they made continued progress, but in the end it didn't really matter because the big bad guys were always one step ahead of them in Young Justice, and they only had to win once, and that was at the end. And then with Avatar, it's like the same thing. Like, the stakes are so high. They really only need the bad guys, the Fire Nation, whatever, Ozai, only really needs to win one battle, one particular battle, in order to win everything. But they have, but the good guys have to win, like, over and over and over again.
That makes me think.
That's one thing. Go ahead, Jeff. That's one thing that kind of annoyed me about season one of Young Justice. Like, every time the good guys win, the bad guys are like, oh, it matters not.
Yeah,
that's, we'll fail.
Prevail. I was like, okay, seriously.
Yeah.
Something that reminds me of a difference, I guess. Avatar, Aang is at, like, such a point of disadvantage, and especially after season two, that it seems like it ends up not mattering, but because it all only does take one battle to triumph. But it seems like they're in a much worse position. Whereas it seems like the bad guy, the Light in Young Justice, is like, it's like they have the entire Justice League to go up against. Like, there's no Justice League in Avatar, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
They have the Earth Kingdom Army.
Yeah, but that's like not even close, and we never actually see them.
I guess the like United Forces would fulfill that role. Sorta, maybe.
Yeah,
like it's like a combination of everyone coming together. And,
yeah, I
except
think
they're not nearly as effective.
I think that's a good point. Kids trying to prove themselves as good as adults. Yeah, like Sokka trying to be like his father.
Everyone trying to live up to their own mentor in Young Justice.
Yeah, well, yeah, definitely.
Superboy trying to live up to Superman.
Yeah. In Avatar, though, I don't think really Aang really has this. It's definitely a Sokka, Zuko, but not, like, in a different way. Yeah. Apparently, Delaney says Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman equal Tenzin Lin. What does that mean?
Well, there's the love characters relationship. Because in the Justice League, it's kind of always been a love triangle between the three of them. And then there's the kind of thing between Tenzin and Lin that they got out at Korra.
Okay.
I think it was originally meant to be that those characters sort of fulfill that similar role in the two shows.
As, like, Overseer?
Yeah, like,
okay,
Tenzin is Road Tornado, he's sort of Den Mother.
Yeah, that's true.
And then Super Cycle and Appa are I Carry You Places, and then Black Canary and Lin are bad ladies who teach people things, and Lex Luthor and Tarlok are the political antagonists.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that. Evil alliances crumble when secrets are revealed.
I believe that's what happened at Summit.
Yeah, okay, it's a very... Okay, yeah, I see that. Summit stuff happens. I don't remember even what specifically happens, but people get mad at each other. And Amon and Lieutenant, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like this is going towards the point of season two of Young Justice being Korra-esque. Even though it can't really be Korra-esque, they aired at the same time. But yeah. Psychological warfare. Brainiac trying to mess with Magan, which ties into Voice of the Night as Amon's messing with Korra. So, yeah. In Young Justice, it's more of a literal psychological warfare. So they can actually go into people's minds.
They actually have battles.
I guess that would sort of parallel the Avatar finale.
Oh, to the energy bending?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah, it's more of like a not on the surface battle. More battle that's going on between them. Where does energy bending even take place? I assume in the brain, but well, no, it takes place probably in
chakras.
All chakras all over the body.
Yeah.
The chi, yeah. Wally and the Crossroads of Destiny. Wally has to sacrifice his life like the adults in Day of Black Sun. That's two different things. Explain that.
I'm pretty sure you were the one who told me to put that one on the outline.
I doubt that. I don't remember saying that.
I'm like 90% sure.
Well, Wally and the Crossroads of Destiny. Well, Wally dies, Aang dies.
Yeah, so...
One of them comes back, though.
Yeah, well...
We don't know what would have happened to Wally in season three.
Were there plans? I think he said something about there being plans of him being resurrected.
He said, spoiler request, no comment.
Oh, okay.
Which, if you follow his blog sort of type thing, you will understand. But it's possible.
They were going to break
But
it
I don't put it as likely.
I think they were going to. Which it just makes it all the more painful that it ended worth it.
I think it would make more sense for them to bring him back, and he just got teleported.
It's superheroes. Superheroes never die.
Yeah.
Especially not in DC.
Yeah.
Wally's sacrifice being like the adults in Diablo X9, that's a very general comparison. If I said that, I apologize. Baddies that sway political opinion. Okay. And we talk about this a little more with Jeff's quote here. Amon comparing to, what's his first name? Godfrey.
G. Gordon.
Yeah, Godfrey. G. Gordon Godfrey, yeah. So I guess, Britt / Jeff, you want to talk about that?
Jeff, go ahead.
Sure. So we were talking about how Amon at the rally is just like Godfrey on his news program, both trying to get the public in an uproar about whatever. And I felt that they both like are trying to do the same thing, but they're going about it in different ways. Like when Amon's on the stage, there's a very clear line drawn. Like Amon's on the stage telling people what to think, and there's people in the crowd being told. And then Amon isn't necessarily one of them. He's not one of them at all. An outsider, a new mysterious guy, a leader. G. Gordon Godfrey is different because he's coming off as just one of us humans who's outraged at whatever he likes, and trying to use his platform to say, hey, look, people just like me are, or yeah, he uses like funny quotes all the time, like those of us who suspected all the time of whatever. Are now angry at this. So, yeah, he's one of the guys, one of the humans. Not like Amon.
Britt?
I think he pretty much covered everything.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with this.
And Godfrey is another difference. When he finds out what is actually happening, he's angered that he was being tricked, and Amon is the head trickster. So...
Yeah, well, then they also have the complication at the end with Godfrey's plot arc, where it was going to go. Like, we see a glimpse of it in the finale.
Wait, when was Godfrey tricked?
Like, when it turned out they had all those ships.
Yeah, he seemed angry. He could have been in on it all along. I don't think it was clear.
Right. Yeah.
Well, in the end of season 2, they have to bring out the ships to, like, protect their investment. We talked about this one, Tenzin, Red Tornado, but... Like the Den Mother Britain said, super cycle, is that what it's called?
Yes.
Okay. Equals.
They call it. I think they call it sphere. Sphere. But yeah. Specifically, super cycle is one of like Appa because Appa is not a small robot thing.
They ride on the sphere. Yeah. Lynn, Black Canary. I could see that. Someone. It's also not clear whether she's like supposed to be sympathetic or not at points. So that's another good comparison to Lynn.
Mm-hmm.
Lex Luthor, Tarlok. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, that's a good one. As someone who's like bad, but like trying to sway, not politically, but also otherwise, like just like influence things negatively, not like head on.
Yeah,
it's like he wants to work
figures.
Within. It's like he wants to work within the system, so he doesn't. He wants to preserve the system.
Yeah,
and save the world.
Mm-hmm. And then, who is Korra most like? That's a good question. I think Korra has qualities of Artemis and Magan.
I would say Korra is most like Cass, or Wonder Girl.
I don't even know what her character is.
She's like Supergirl season 2 most, but with like a temper. Like
very headstrong.
More stubborn. She's like Artemis and Wonder Girl had a morphed into a single person.
Okay. I can see that. Superboy's patches being like the uncontrolled avatar state, and then it gives the person unabridged power and rage. Yeah, I could see that.
I don't know if the avatar state doesn't make you angry.
Well, angst seems.
Yeah, he, you have to be like.
Well, you don't have. It doesn't like make you angry, but anger is a way to go into it.
Yeah. Aang goes into it because he's angry.
Yeah.
Superboy, it just made him angrier. He was like the steroids, essentially. So that was kind of an incorrect statement.
And then both of them didn't want to go into it again because of the anger.
Yeah.
And then we talked about this, Fear the Mole, Artemis, and Asami. Both of them were like, are they good guys or are they bad guys?
Yeah. And then they both ended up to be good guys, and the Mole in Young Justice was totally unexpected. And the Mole in Korra did not exist.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. There wasn't, like, that whole thing.
Bolin wasn't secretly evil.
He should have been. At least something would have happened.
Yeah, they could have, like, done an old Dai Li on him when they had him in custody.
Oh, I like that.
That would have been beautiful. Or, like, he decides to become...
Yeah, where are the Dai Li?
In the Earth Kingdom, presumably.
Well, this is the Earth Kingdom, but...
Yeah, but they aren't in this part of the Earth Kingdom. They're
in Ba Sing Se, not the...
Well, I mean, 70 years later, they could have traveled a little bit.
Nah, they don't do that.
We should see Dai Li somewhere.
That'd be cool.
Well, it turns out they've been in the background of episodes all the time. We just haven't seen them.
That'd be fun.
Just a giant twist.
I wish they would have like right as far seeing as that.
It's like, I mean, they are, but it's like in a spoiler. Well, no, I can't talk about it. Doctor Who. There's a thing in season 4.
Oh, is season 4?
Yeah, I'm talking about the thing on Donna's back.
Oh, yeah. I gotcha.
Yeah. But yeah, book one written separately from all the other books, you know. Death of Wally, we kind of talked about this. So it's like, what if they killed off Bolin? The thing is that Wally's actually a character, though. Like,
Bolin. Yeah, and Bolin. But people love Bolin and his potential as a character.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Bolin has yet to affect plot in some huge overarching way, which I hope he will, instead of just being
in the background.
A monkey to hang, just to write off other characters' happenstance.
They're both very popular well-loved characters, yeah, that have a similar effect on the fandoms.
Just, you know, I don't think if Bolin died I would be as devastated as I was. / am when Wally died.
Well, Wally's like your favorite character ever, so I don't know if that counts.
Yeah, and then he died in the last 5 minutes of the show. It was so sad.
After they bait you with the Spitfire stuff.
They were my two favorite characters, they became an OTP, and then they killed half of it off in the last 5 minutes.
Would I be a bad person if I said I felt more betrayed by not getting to see Darkseid do anything cool?
I mean, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to say it anyway. But
there's a bunch of stuff that disappointingly, we don't get to see
at the end. Yeah.
One thing that
Wally would have come back. Like, they would have said, oh, he went to the Speed Force, he's fine now, turns out. But
Greg Wiseman said season 1, there is no Speed Force.
They said that several times in The Flash, and then guess what? Turns out there's a Speed Force.
Oh.
Jeff?
I wonder if it's worth discussing, like, the difference between a show killing off someone in the way that Wally was killed, like fade out, mm-hmm. as opposed to how some other, Attack on Titan would kill someone off.
Like, yeah, there was no body.
It would be very dead, very dead. And there's no equivocating about it.
Wally just sort of ceased.
I think in shows like this where its death is more unexpected, it has, and it's a major character. I mean, I don't watch Attack on Titan, but from what I can tell, every character dies, so it's like you don't actually get to know them. I don't know.
Well, you get to know characters. They don't just...
Not like Wally. Not like Wally, you know.
It's not like Wally. They haven't killed off Mikasa yet, you know, who's a main character, but they...
What show is this?
This is an anime, Attack on Titan.
It's very popular. And...
Not for young kids.
Well, we also mentioned
for young
Game
kids,
of Thrones.
Not for young
yeah.
kids. Just, I think Wally's the first, like, animated character that I was really super attached to that actually died. Like, can you guys think of anybody else in animation that was a main character that died.
I feel like there have been a lot, but now that you ask, I can't think of any of them.
I mean, American animation.
Well, one comes to mind. But...
Yes. Is it a spoiler?
Yeah.
Is it American animation?
No.
Okay.
Like, type it in chat. We'll see.
I mean, yeah. Are you talking about Madoka?
No. That's not... I haven't been able to get through that. It's not gripping me as much.
Okay. Here, we already saw the one I was talking about. But yeah, American animation is very tame in general, more kid-centric, so I don't think this stuff would happen in general.
The only other people I can think of is I think the girls sacrificed themselves at the end of Switch Season 2, also ironically, also directed by Greg Wiseman.
I wonder if that happened in Gargoyles as well. I barely remember Gargoyles. I remember watching it when I was pretty young, but I don't remember any plot details.
I don't remember any plot details at all. It came out, the show started when I was like 3 and ended when I was like 7, so didn't really watch that show. Dylan, did you watch it? You're old.
No, I did. I'm old, really. I'm like a year older than you. But no, I didn't. I'm considering watching it at some point.
Yes. It's a classic, so.
We discussed it before, but I think Greg Wiseman is like a staple of American animation. Like one of the biggest figures, certainly.
It's just kind of a shame that he's sort of being forced out of the business.
I mean, he's working on the most anticipated anime show coming up right now, so that's good.
I mean, working on Star Wars, there's not really a higher level. Like, it's one of the most successful franchises of all time.
Yeah, but it didn't really
sort of
do the
doing
other...
like the Harry Potter animated TV show.
They've already had one Star Wars show on Cartoon Network, and they recently canceled it.
That was business details, though.
It still was canceled.
Cartoon Network with stuff, not the greatest. But anyway, it should be noted that Weissman's working with Dave Filoni on Star Wars Rebels. Dave Filoni did Clone Wars, and is also the main director of Season 1 of Avatar. So yay, intersecting.
We should all watch it.
I guess, yeah. Hopefully,
is it going to be the 3D style animation of Clone Wars or normal 2D animation?
It says CGI animated series.
Okay, so Clone Wars most likely.
Probably, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so then the Weissman, I think Mike and Brian are certainly up there in American animation figures right now. Even though they really haven't done anything other than... I mean, they've worked on shows. They haven't created shows other than Avatar shows. But yeah.
I think American animation figures are nowhere near as prominent as in, like, Japan. Because even people who might watch a show might not be familiar with the creators and their other works and stuff.
I think that's similar to how it is in Japan. I think that's more of an animated... show thing in general, that people aren't really visible. I mean, like, beyond Miyazaki, there's not too many... I mean, we don't live in Japan, but...
Yeah.
Like, I don't think...
And that's fair. There's only one other I could think of, and that's Akira Toriyama, who made Dragon Ball.
Yeah. I don't think people watching an anime in Japan are necessarily familiar with the creator and stuff. And also, in Japan, it's different because most animes are based off of something. And it's more of a direct adaptation than here when it's like, let's make something from scratch. Although there's certainly like Madoka and other shows in Japan. There's certainly original shows too. It's just definitely in the minority. I do think that's a thing with animation in general, though. People, creators not being as publicly known. But yeah, anyway, Young Justice, I guess the general point is that important creator, Avatar important creator. Any things you guys can think of before we start to wrap up?
Not a whole lot. I feel like we covered the basics.
I can't think of anything.
Jeff?
Sad to say. I think that's it for me.
Okay. This is a very exciting minicast.
I feel like we waited too long to do this one.
It's all these comparison ones are like this. Like, it's hard to... It's not like a cohesive thing. I think we've made some interesting points. People who watch Young Justice might like it.
I just wish that Wally was still alive.
I mean, yeah. Spitfire, really good ship.
It was my ship, you guys.
They finally ended the comic book series recently, didn't they, like, in the last month or two? They had it running for a while after the show ended.
Yeah, it was kind of. I was really disappointed that they. Speaking of the comic, I was really disappointed that they canceled it because it was actually doing well.
Another similarity. Both shows have comics.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, both shows have comics, but one of them is much better than the other.
Them is made by an actual company that makes comics.
Well, who are the Young Justice comics by?
It switches out. I don't think it's by one particular person.
Okay.
No, I mean, Dark Horse
is like a legitimate thing.
The number of the art is by Christopher Jones, who has a Tumblr, and he's awesome, so you should check him out.
I know he did an AMA on the Young Justice subreddit a while ago. It was pretty interesting to read through.
Yeah, he's kind of great.
I will see if I can come up with a link to that and post it in the forums whenever this gets posted. Cool.
Yeah, this will be up, I mean, as you listeners know, at the end of August/beginning of September. But yeah, we're actually recording this, like, relatively soon, but not the minicast before. So this is our last podcast before Korra Book 2, so I guess see you guys then. It'll be exciting.
Yay!
It's weird to think we're that close after so long.
Well, still 3 weeks away, but yeah.
It's closer than we've ever been before, so...
Well, that's inherently true, yes. I've been your main host, co-host/mini-host, Philip, Jeff, Britt, and other credits. What do you guys... Thanks for listening. Give us feedback on this. But watch... If you want to post on the forums, jungwoofang.net/forums, please do watch the spoilers. I think there's a spoiler tag you can use. I'm not sure, though. On the forums. And you can email us at dylan@dongwufang.net and follow us on Tumblr and Twitter. What do you guys want to end on?
Wally's not dead.
Oh, that's just lies.
Spitfire.
Okay.
Darkseid.
Say something Young Justice-y.
Spitfire is dead.
Something Young Justice-y.
Spitfire.
I'm gonna kill you.